Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. And today we've got Mary Rodwell returning. How are you going, Mary?
I'm going well, Peter. Nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's good. Good. So you didn't have a break over the Christmas holidays?
I was hoping to have a break, but it seems to me that nothing stops in our very interesting world. Funnily enough, even I was saying to you as just before we came on air that even Christmas night, I heard that a couple here in Agnes Water had seen a big orange light on Christmas night that was doing strange things. So as you know what it's like, Peter, there's no rest for the wicked, and we must have been very wicked in a past life, I reckon.
Yeah, no, that's how it happened. Like I said, I've had 5 days at Mount Buffalo, and that wasn't even rest. It was still doing some type of work, and then a lot to catch up on when I got back, even more than when I left. So it's pretty full on like that. Has there been other sightings up your way at Agnes around the Christmas time?
That one certainly, and I've heard also around the region. I mean, Bundaberg, there's been a lot going on there as well. But I think it's to do with the fact we've got Yerimbala National Park right on our doorstep as well. Lots of open spaces. I mean, 30 years ago, I was told by a young man who's got a family now. He said he used to come and visit his relatives here. And 30 years ago, they called it the UFO Highway. So it's got a reputation for a lot going on over a long time. So again, I think it's part of it's the energy of the place itself, but it does seem to draw a lot of people here also that have had experiences because, I know a number of them already in the short time that I've been here.
How long have you been in that area?
About 4.5 years now, and it's been quite fascinating how I've got to see that other level of the community that are all into the alternatives. You know, we've got they've built an earth ship here, you know, the house built of recycled materials. There are a lot of people that are into the holistic lifestyle, you know, the 4-acre blocks or the 48-acre blocks. It is drawing that really interesting kind of alternative community. And the numbers of people that have seen stuff, or I would say fit into what we call the star seed or star phenomena, where, you know, they've always felt different, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm meeting them all the time. Even there's a lovely couple, older couple actually, that always sell crystals here, and they only sell to the community because they live here. They don't go and sell anywhere else. And when I started to talk to them one day and said, why are you so interested in you know, buying the crystals and what have you? And the gentleman said to me, because I get told about what the properties of the crystals are by my star family. And what I realized was the whole reason they're doing and selling the crystals is primarily to get those energies out to people, you know, and to help them understand what properties they have. And they do this simply because of their encounters.
It's funny you bring that up. I actually got Moldavite 2 days ago. And it's funny when I was reading what it does, because everyone kept on bringing it up, going, if you're having as much interaction as you are, she gets some of that. And I talked to this lady about a month ago when I took a couple of girlfriends out to Yakandanda, and they got some beautiful sort of Indian type dresses. And I just said to the lady there, I said, oh, you got any Moldavite? And she goes, oh, no, I don't, but I'll see if I can get some in. And I totally forgot about it. She rang me up on Sunday and said, I've got it. Just got it here from, I think it was Czechoslovakia. And I've meditated with it a few times, and it's sort of weird. It's sort of like from my feet to my hands, it sort of vibrates and then it comes in. And I was just like, this is a trippy stone. But she said she didn't know much about it. And when she got it and read up on it, she said, I know why you want it. And she said, yeah, definitely amazing, amazing stone. Or what, you know, techite, meteorite, whatever it is. But yeah, everyone sort of got their purpose with that. So where you're located, that's sort of southeast Queensland, isn't it?
It's actually north of Brisbane, central Queensland.
Oh, it's north of Brisbane.
Yeah, it's about a 6-hour drive actually from Brisbane, past the Sunshine Coast. And it's the Burnett region. They call it the Discovery Coast and what have you. And it's equally equidistant between Bundaberg and Gladstone on the coast itself. So it's actually about 90 minutes drive from either of those towns. So there's little community really, really off off the grid in many ways. And it's actually the closest to the Great Barrier Reef than even up in Cairns and what have you, because we get a lot of ferries that go over to the Great Barrier Reef from here.
Awesome areas, like Cairns and Palm Cove and all that's just, yeah, it's paradise. Now, I wanted to talk to you about a few different things and sort of get a few different things out on the Star Kids, what's happening there at the moment and what's coming through, and tips and sort of things, experiences that are sort of opening up now, sort of going through the first awakening phase, and even a little bit of MyLab stuff, which I wouldn't mind covering first off, just sort of what you've come across, because I'm talking to Brad Thornton, who I found through your website as one of the other people that people can go to talk, and he's absolutely wicked on like anything. But I was fascinated by his story and how here in Australia, even with the MyLab experiences I've had, how they're different to America in the way that there's sort of no, like most people in the States, there's sort of some military background, family connection. Both him and I think it was our grandparents were in the wars or something like that, but there's sort of no recent, you know, family, like our parents or anything, connection with that sort of thing, which when you look at the history in the States, that seems to be a common theme, whether you grew up in the military with your parents or, you know, it's just drags on. But how much have you come across MyLab type stuff here in Australia, and also you communicate with others around the world that come to you? How different is it from country to country, and how much is happening here that you've come across? Not that it's like a full-blown out thing, but it is happening.
Well, first of all, I think it's happening globally, because I get a lot of contacts from those in the UK as well as the US that have had some kind of MyLab interaction. And, it's actually Miles Johnson in his series Bases has covered a lot of the English MyLab interactions where they've named bases all over England and in Scotland. There's also bases in Scotland with MyLab. I've had, you know, those from Scotland contact me about, you know, this whole thing about having implants and feeling some of it's been military or whatever. I think the only reason we haven't got so much here is simply because we haven't got the population.
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing that's really important here. Secondly, I think that it's not so well known in Australia, again, because there isn't the population, there isn't enough going out there. And maybe it's something also that's not really been recognised by a lot of researchers here in Australia either. You know, it's like, again, the population itself means that we've only got small little UFO groups, we've got, you know, scattered researchers, etc. Not all of them, you know, have the time to focus totally on this for their work. So they don't get the numbers coming in as I do in a CERN, in the sense that, you know, this is my full-time work.
Yeah.
You know, every day I'm answering 30 to 40 emails a day, and from the globe, as well as obviously Australia. There's no doubt MyLab's going on here. I've got no question there. I think the way they pick people up is not only if they've been in the military, but because of your energetic signature. And I think they have equipment that allows them to find you via that, as well as other things they're looking for, even to the point where I'm beginning to suspect even the blood tests that they do is when you're a baby, you know, when you get born, there's a lot of different tests they do for so-called various conditions.
Could be cataloging.
I think that's without question. I think that they know what to look for. I think there is something that they can pick up in the blood, and it may be related to certain blood groups, I don't know, but there are certain genetics or certain energy signatures that they will have a way of picking you up. This is before you even talk about it to anyone. They know also when there's craft in, if they are in certain areas, they will know also there's people in those areas that have had encounters. They've also got the UFO groups that are great collecting places for people with experiences as well. Because whether we like it a lot of these organizations, the bigger organizations such as MUFON and what have you, and whether they like me saying this or not, most of those are infiltrated.
I know, and what better way to put out this information than get into the core root of the research field? Because then you can mix up whatever you want into and put your own agenda in there. And there could be even people under my control to an extent where they don't even have a clue what they're doing or why they're doing it, but they've got to do it. And that information goes out, and there are people out there that take anything as gospel, and then all of a sudden that they've just taken that, you know, the way it is, to be the way it is. What I've noticed too is that, like, even with my experiences, I was saying to Brad, like, they obviously got ET technology, because the way they get me out of my home when it is a My Lab experience is very, it's not as common, and I'm a head screwed for a few days and a bit dopey, where usually I'll be a bit dopey for half a day if I've been taken. But they've obviously got the same technology to pull you out. And what also got me was a lot of people were sort of weird about me when I first came out, because I had the black helicopters flying around and people were seeing it around the block. They were unmarked. They just didn't know what the hell was going on. And it was directly over my place. And then the grey helicopters started to come into the picture. It's gone from black vans to white vans. We saw one recently that had a satellite dish on the top. It looked like this thing was bomb-proof. It was made out of one piece of metal. But when you bring up that, there's only, from what I know, there could be more. I know that Brad Thornton's had an experience with the grey helicopter, and so has Damien Knott. So it's not just me seeing this sort of military stuff going on, which was a bit of a surprise to me. But Brad did bring up this sort of, I think it was something with the helicopter where they could read your DNA at a certain age. But what I've come to some sort of conclusion theory that I think that most of my lab are actually experience, like what I've taken it for is that they seem to have interactions with extraterrestrials too, and it's a long thing. And I think it's like as if with the contract we've signed here, we could be signing up for the My Lab experiences to find out what's going on in that and reporting back to our own group, sort of like a double agent type thing.
Well, I know that you've done an interview with Niara Isley, and Niara and I have been communicating. I met her in the UFO Congress in 2010, and she may have already said that I actually worked with her in regression.
Yeah, she did.
And what was really important with the one that we did, which she mentioned briefly, was that was a reminder of her mission on this planet. It, you know, she didn't want to re-explore more of the MyLab anymore because she's got a real insight now to what happened and whatever. But what that was giving her was the big picture again, and it was explaining, and she said, now I know that, you know, I'd made an agreement with my star family to come into human form, to actually experience the MyLab, and then to write about it, to expose it. So that was her mandate. That was her mission. And that's why she doesn't complain about it, because she said that was part of why I came here, to expose how what actually happens, what they're doing. And this was the whole reason for writing the book. So when you see the bigger picture, you're no longer there's nothing about Niara that suggests a victim. She, you know, she's fully conscious of her journey here, and the fact that once she'd gained the information, she said her star family actually warned off the military and said, you leave this one alone now. You leave her alone. And she said herself, nothing's happened since then. Yeah. It's like, you know, she's gained what she... And I've heard others get where they've been warned off. Mike Oram talks about that in his book, Does It Rain in Other Dimensions, where he was picked up at Area 51 when he was going to Rachel and just doing that at a time where I was actually in Nevada as well. And he said that he'd been picked up by the MyLab people outside of Area 51. And, I mean, he talks about his experience there. And what was fascinating was his light beings came in and basically rescued him from that experience. And he talks about that in a regression that he had done later. So again, we've got the theme that, you know, Simon Parks to a certain extent said a similar thing about his with his mantid being family, saying you leave this man alone, even though they wanted him because of his genetics and the involvement of his mother. I mean, his is an incredible story as well. But again, it was like, the beings were saying, enough already, you're not having this one. We are not allowing this to happen. So I go back to the soul journey, is that some of the experiences that people are having is often because they report back to, this is how it is on this planet. This is what they're doing. And, you know, I've got other people who are the starseed saying to me, you know, that they've come down as a reporter and they're experiencing the human condition and reporting what's going on here from a human level. One lady was a walk-in and told me that was her job. She called herself an undercover agent. She walked in to a three-year-old girl's body, and she couldn't, she had to learn how to eat. She had to learn how to speak, because her normally she was a 9-foot being with blonde hair, blue eyes, came in on a cylindrical craft, telepathic, didn't have to, as I say, eat, found herself in a little girl's body and said, I had to learn how to talk. I had to eat.
I'm glad you brought that up, because nobody's brought that up. And we talked about it a couple of times. Sorry for cutting you off, but I'd really like to go in for the listeners about the walk-ins. I've come across this the last couple of years, just it's been brought out to me a lot of times. And it's through hypnosis and just talking to people, it seems to be something that's becoming, that's been happening for a long time, but nobody's got a clue, or nobody's really gone into it except yourself. And there are researchers like yourself that have been covering it for a couple of years now in the States here and far. So would you like to go into what a walk-in is?
Well, I came across the whole concept of walk-ins probably about 20 years ago. I think I've always said to you, I'm one of these gatherers of information. If it's weird and wonderful and a mystery, I want to know about it, you know? So it's just, I'm nosy and curious. And I read a number of books on the whole walk-in experience, and fascinating how many people actually believe they're walk-ins. Some say, you know, I've become more conscious walk-ins, and they will know the time when they've walked into a human body. The whole concept seems to be the fact that a soul will be born into a human body, may only have a certain agenda up to a certain point in their lives. And they may say, look, I only need to be, you know, here for 10 years. Then I'm done what I've needed to do this time. The body's still functional. They may have an agreement with another soul, probably part of their soul grouping, saying you can come in and carry on and do what you need to do, because they may say, I don't want to go through the baby phase again. You know, I want to come in as, you know, a little bit beyond that. So there'll be a kind of contractual thing between the two souls. So one will vacate and the other one will come in. But the understanding is that if a soul walks into that body, that they will carry on any of the unresolved issues that that other soul has left behind. So that if there are certain things they've not dealt with, the new soul will have to deal with them, because that's part of the contract. So that's one of the understandings of, you know, why there is this walk-in kind of thing. Sometimes a lot of people say that they just noticed a huge shift in personality, character. They are often completely different, and it may be some traumatic event. It may be that, you know, there's been some trauma where the soul then vacates and the other one actually comes in. In fact, there's a young man in England who, Anne Andrews' son, said he's a walk-in. And he, you know, he now talks about his own ET experiences and what have you, but he reckoned he was a walk-in. At the moment of birth, one soul moved out and the other one actually came in. And that's how, you know, how he came in. So the sense is that they don't always want to waste the physical container. If they've reached a certain point and they can find a way of utilizing that container because it's still healthy, when we get over the fact that the container isn't us,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
that sometimes it's a waste to lose a healthy container, so another soul will say okay. So, and this is this seems to be the understanding that a lot of walk-ins have, is that they've come in because they've got a mandate, they've got something to do, but they can't be fussed to do the baby stuff often, because it takes a while for them to actually get on with whatever mission. And they've usually got something they've come for. They've got something really important that they've got to do. And they'll, you know, needing to be in a certain family, a certain environment or whatever. But there's a, you know, there is a real sense that they don't even remember much of their previous, you know, even the memories are not the same for them as it would be if the same soul stayed in there. They literally take over in terms of a new personality, a new awareness. And people will say, you know, they've always said, you know, they're completely different to how I remember them, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite bizarre. And there is organizations out there now, walking associations. And I actually spoke at a walking conference over a webinar last year because they wanted to know my perspective as someone who supports people with encounters. You know, are some of those that are coming in extraterrestrial? Well, yes, they are. And this is where I mentioned this wonderful lady who I met in her 60s, who said, Mary, I was a walk-in at three years old. I remember the actual time where I went from coming on that cylindrical craft, where I came into the human body and not knowing how to eat or how to talk because we were telepathic. And she had a little support person, which was non-physical, to help her cope with the process because it was awesome. Very traumatic. You know, she said it was really scary for me because, you know, I was in a very dense body, didn't like it, wasn't comfortable. And she said, there are some like me around the planet. I met another one like me, she said, when I was in China, a little Chinese lady, and we just looked at one another and we knew we were from the same place. But she regularly goes and debriefs, if you like, to her family, her star family. She knows that she goes there, she brings in information, but nobody would know because she doesn't talk about it. It's very much her own personal journey. She said, even my friends and people around me have no idea that this is my reality, this is my truth, you know, because she said, we're here again, like many of the different intelligences that are interacting with us, all of them have their own ways of gaining intelligence. And sometimes it has to be through being in a human form, because what is the best way to know what it's like for a human is to be part of the human. But they are always aware that that's a small part of their psyche, but the rest of it is galactic in terms of their awareness and what have you. So, you know, it's part of the soul journey sometimes to come in at a certain point.
Very much like the starseed scenario. Like you can't sort of... you know, put your wants and needs onto a society, but if you infiltrate and you work from the inside out, just like the other side has done, where they're, you know, doing whatever they're doing, you could call it Archon Network or whatever, sort of a similar thing. Now, as you know, with the starseeds scenario, there's a lot that aren't just ETs or they're from another dimension or planet or star, but some have come from what they call Source, or what I call Source. With the walking scenario, have you come across anybody that's come here directly from the Source? Or is just an ET type of interdimensional place they've come and then and reincarnated?
No one's ever said to me that that's their understanding. They may say the nearest to Source that I think that I've understood is the light beings, you know, one of the interesting things, a beautiful young lady not far from where you live down in Melbourne said to me that some of the energy beings, she calls them, the ones that help to create humans, she said once I always saw them in containers until one day she said, I want to know, you know, your real form. And and she described the energy being literally unzipping the container and out just came light.
Yeah, I've heard of that too, yeah, from others.
I think what we've got to get away from is the form, because the form is actually not, it's like looking at the book, you know, the book cover and saying that's what the book's about. We're not the book cover. You know, what we are inside is not what people see here. And it's the same with many of these beings. They're coming in often in a form that they think is acceptable to us or gets us to look at things differently. You know, a religious person, for example, may see a beautiful lady who might be a Pleiadian, for example, and because they're religious and are Christian, they may say, well, she looked like the Virgin Mother to me, you know? So, you know, like a light being could look like an angel to somebody in a belief system that, you know, believes in angels. So they will come in the form that we're comfortable with. And this is what we have to understand.
It's a big thing too, because a lot of UFO groups, and I don't care what they think, but this is where it's been a big nuts and bolts type thing. Like, I've got photos of craft that you've seen that are just blue light ships. They're light, they're energy.
Yeah.
A lot of the beings that I interact with are the same like that again. And then I didn't know how to come out about Shiji, one of the contacts I've got, because she was a light being from a star. But then when I got, my brother was telling me to read Dolores Cannon's books, I'd never heard of her. And I got into it and I was like, well, I don't feel so crazy, because there's people reporting beings from stars, and it was sort of mainly because she's Pleiadian, or it's Pleiadian, whatever she is, because that's not even a name, and you know, light being form. But you know, the average thing is hearing about the physical human type being from the Pleiades, which I've got memories from being there, from somewhere just outside of there. So I knew that to be real, but then I'm like, how do I talk about this? But after a while talking to others, you realise, you know, it's not so crazy. But this is where I've said to others, I could talk to an average ufologist for 5 minutes and I'll do their head in, because they're thinking about the 3D realm. They're thinking about little green men and a nuts and bolts craft, where I know from personal experience there's beings under the earth, on the earth living among us, in this dimension in space, and then the interdimensional, interplane ones, and then you got source and even stuff that I'm not even aware of yet. But it's where you've got to be open-minded, like a good researcher I can pick up on, because they will go where the evidence leads them. And I'll always ask them, did you have a preconceived notion of what you think you would find? They go, yeah, I did. Which is good, because they're being honest. But 9 times out of 10... when they do let the evidence lead them where they go, it's nothing like they originally thought. And that's good, because it's brought other aspects in there, and then you let other people that are specialising in those areas take that bit of information and put it into what they're doing. So when it comes into light beings and all that, I think people just need to be open-minded. Like you say, we don't know what we don't know, you know? It's just the way, like you say that all the time, and I say that to people because it is the best way to put it. We don't know what we don't know. And I think in an unbounded state, we know all, but when you're here, you sort of got like amnesia for a bit. Mm. And we're sort of refinding ourselves, regrouping. And that's what I want to go into now. Like it seems, and you're talking about it when we first hooked up, where a lot of star seeds are finding each other now. Would you like to talk about that and the star kids as well, how that comes into all this, how that, I'd say they're more aware than what the older ones are. Because I'm meeting little kids that can do bloody physics that you wouldn't be able to do unless, you know, you've spent high school, university, and you're in a proper position, young as hell, and they're just blowing my mind.
Well, I think that's where we're going. I mean, these children, you know, the Homo noeticus, the ones that are being born now and have been for a few years now, they have a lot of conscious memory, not only of their past lives, but also their role on this planet. When you've got a 9-year-old telling you that she can speak at water to heal it, speaks different languages, and that she's come here to help her family wake up, for example, that's a 9-year-old speaking. I've got a 7-year-old that looked at the script in my book, and spontaneously through Skype, her mother said, my daughter said she could read this. I said, can you read it to me? She said, do you want it in the language or do you want it in English? And I said, could you do both? She said, yes. So she speaks it in the language to me quite spontaneously. Then she translates it and says it's to do with, you know, what we're doing to the planet, et cetera, et cetera, and why they're here. And I said, so who actually is behind that script? She said, these ones, she said, are the Greys. But she'd read some other ones to me, and she mentioned the Greys and the Mantid beings were behind it. Again, she read it in the language. And it wasn't every script she could read. She said, no, I can't read that one, but I can read this one. So, she was actually, you could see her actually translating it in her mind. She wasn't just reading it. You know, it's like anything you haven't read before. She would read it like she's never read it before. And then she'd actually tell me who was the beings behind it or whatever. But she tells her mother, you know, she's been to other planets to learn how to levitate objects and what have you, and how they help her by holding her hand so that they show her how that she can use her mind to levitate objects and things like this. She even mentioned once when they were taking her, she was putting her hands through the glass and she got a bit scared. So she stiffened up and the glass broke as she was going through it, because they were taking her through the grass and she was getting scared. So she said, the being said, don't worry, it's going to be fine. She said, 3 beings were the other side of the glass. They came together, put themselves together, and the glass completely reformed. So they actually fixed up the broken window. Now, this is a 7-year-old telling you this, you know. You can say, well, she's very imaginative.
That's better than sci-fi.
But this is the point, is that these children are being exposed to their potential. And this 9-year-old in Northern Europe said to me, Mary, human beings haven't got a clue how amazing they are. But she said, the problem is the programming. And she said, and until they believe it, they won't be able to manifest it, because it's all about them being open enough to believing in possibilities. Mm. And that's part of the reason that we get the programs, the programming that says that's nothing real unless you can touch and feel it, hear it and see and smell it. When in fact, the truth is that we are multidimensional.
Dimensional beings, yeah.
You know, and this is, you know, and the programming is what limits us. She said, when you go to school, this is how she described it, they program you out of your light.
Yep.
So you go in with the knowing and they program you out of the knowing.
They limit what they would... They basically teach you what they want you to know, and then the teachers who are taught at university, wherever, they're limited. It's like if they come up with a new way, a new method, and it doesn't go by regulations, you can lose your certificate or your license, whatever. Same with... I've heard of so many stories about different types of cures, where because it hasn't gone with mainstream, but yet it's been proven to work, yeah. It's kicked out. And I could totally agree with that type of scenario, which is happening, that we're taught what they want us to learn, and that's it. So you do lose that connection when younger, because it's installed in you when you're young. And it's like I say to parents when they talk about the boogeyman or somebody in their kid's cupboard, I say, don't think they're nuts.
No.
Because 9 times out of 10, it could be happening if you've seen stuff yourself. Yeah. And don't blow it off when it happens, because it makes the kid feel nuts. But don't do it in a way where it's going to egg it on. Like, you would know, because you're coming across these kids. And it was a good point where you said there was somebody, I think, in Europe you were just talking about. This is, you're being contacted by parents and children worldwide. Which is something that really needs to be heard, because it's not like just here in Australia or the States. You're getting this stuff from everywhere.
I think that's, you know, when people say to me, why do I got someone in a black American saying to me, why is it that it's just, you know, white people that are getting these things going on and what have you? I said, that's not the case
at
all.
Yeah.
I said, this is cross-cultural. I said, it doesn't matter what colour your skin is, where you come from. It may be interpreted differently depending on your culture. You may understand it differently because of how, you know, your belief system is, you know, what your religious or spiritual beliefs are. It will be explained in whatever way, you know, from that perspective. But, you know, I've had people contact me from Poland, from Hungary, from Japan, from China, from, you know, South America. And often they're quite, one of them was quite cross with me, because he said, It's not right that you're only putting this out in English. Why isn't this in other languages? Because we all need to hear it.
Well, get your secretary. That's what we need.
Oh, yeah. I could do with a few of those. But the bottom line is that, you know, what people don't realize is that we're all operating in a very limited way to put this stuff out there, as you are, with, you know, what limited resources you have, because we're not funded by anybody. Yeah. You know, we're doing it out of passion, because we believe in it and because it's important, and all our energies go into it because of that. But we're not getting supported by mainstream, because mainstream most of the time either is uninformed, or the ones that do know certainly don't want us getting any more energy in terms of finances, because we could do more. So, you know, we're constrained, really, in terms of how we you know, financially operate, simply because of that. And they know that. The ones that want to keep the lid on this say, well, if they haven't got the funds and they haven't got the resources, they can't get the information out there, or only in a very limited way. So, you know,
exactly,
this is
right. People have said to me, oh, you're making a heap off the books. And it's like, well, actually, I'm on welfare, and I actually took my $20 check for my book into Centrelink to go, oh, I've earned $20. And they laughed at me and just said, don't worry about putting it in there, because it's just $20. And it's like, you've got no idea. But we're doing it because that drive, we're here for what we're doing now. With the Starseed kids, like Dolores terms it the three waves, and I sort of do too, because it was exposed in different sort of generations to me through Shiji. Why do you, like, it seems the younger ones, like you were just mentioning, they've got this high, like, I'm now, and for a while I've been seeing the beings physically or astrally, all different ways you could, you know, imagine. So it's physical interaction where they're physical, even projections. But with the kids, it seems as if from the younger age, like the third wave that I'm referring to, they've got these full-on memory and interactions like you just referred to. Now, would you say it's because of the waves that came through to prepare the third wave so it was easier for them? Or is there something else in play where maybe the DNA on the body computer has been upgraded, or is it a stronger sort of spirit coming in where it's not going to have as much amnesia in the beginning like we do? Do you know why it's just so full on with these young ones now? They're intelligent and everything else.
I think it's probably all of that, to be honest. My feeling is, like anything else, you know, those like myself, I think, are, if you like, the way, preparing the way, you know, breaking down some of the boundaries by what we're doing, as you are, to prepare the whole environment for the new ones coming in. So it's got to be a process. Everything's got to be a process. I mean, I look at my own process as a nurse midwife 40 years ago. If you told me about the stuff that I accept now, I would have probably thought, you know, I was going crazy. Because if you'd said, look, Mary, you know, one day you're going to be traveling the world talking about aliens, I would have probably sent you to the nearest psychiatrist and said, look, they've got some good medications going, you know, because I couldn't have imagined at that time that I would be involved in. I mean, it's like acupuncture. When I was a nurse, it was considered, you know, quackery. Whereas now my daughter's a, you know, a naturopath, and she does acupuncture, and it's amazing. I can see now, even with that, how my whole way of looking at the world and understanding how things work and my programming from then to where I am now, it's taken all that time for me to come to this place. And I think this is the thing, when you've been heavily programmed, as we all have on this planet, right from the moment of birth, we're being programmed into what is real, what isn't real. What's okay, what's not okay, how you operate in society. All of those things place limits on what you can take on board. And one of the hardest is for those within the scientific field, for example, because I've got this lovely guy who is part of a CERN now, who's a geneticist, and he's had a harder ride than most simply because his programming is as a scientist. And yet in his room, he's seen beings in, you know, he's seen that you've UFOs with his dad and with his best friend. All of that, he still had all of that, but saying, you know, how as a scientist can I get a handle on this? Because my science world hasn't prepared me for this. So he vacillates like this the whole time, and he's only just come to accept the word energy. Yeah. Don't want to hear that energy word, Mary. Don't mention the word energy, you know. Sorry, it's raining a lot here now. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can. It's just slightly in the background. I'd love that here because we haven't had it for a while. Bloody dry down here. Now, that's like a good point hitting on again is the programming. Like, I've said it to others before, and it's like as if, you know, whether you call it the Archon Network or whatever, it's like as if they knew when they came here, and I think they've been interacting on and off since the start, that side of what's going on. And like I say, it's self-serving, not in the service. But as you said, if you've got a parasitic weed on that lives off a tree or whatever, well, that's what it's got to do to survive. And my understanding is this shift is for them too. Yeah. So this is including those guys. But it's like as if that network said many years ago that by the year 2000, there's going to be this internet set up, there's going to be everything. But 100 years before that, they said, what we're going to do, because the population is getting big enough, we've got to start programming them 5 days a week, give them a school. So it was smart, because once it got more enough where information, you could say around the early 1900s, the communication isn't what today, definitely. But it was starting to get around with the newspapers and people, you know, traveling from country to country. So the programming really had to start then on a huge scale. But, you know, you go back to ancient things and there's, you know, stuff like Moses sitting up in space talking about the round earth, where it wasn't until probably 1500 years later or whatever when Galileo was saying, you know, the earth is round and, you know, we're not like we're circling around the sun, not, you know, the other way around. So it's always been there, and in the end, truth wins. It's just at the moment there's this, I guess, fight for enlightenment going on, where why we're talking about the star seeds and doing what we're doing is because we're in that fight now for enlightenment. Like, I name my book Operation Starseed. It's not a war. It's coming here without weaponry, reincarnating in, and we're on an operation for enlightenment. Because what other way can we do it? We go by universal law, and that's where do you think things are now with how things are playing out?
I think we're in a very interesting place at the moment, which is, to me, part of this, almost like we're at a point where chaos is reigning.
I'd say the same. This is the year for it.
A lot of the corruption is being highlighted now. People can no longer hide behind lines because they're being found out. People are getting to see the reality that how we're being controlled from so many, many levels. I mean, I keep coming across more and more of how things have been manipulated and whatever. And it's like, how did I not see that before? You know, it's like, how dumb was I, you know, that I couldn't actually see this. But this uncovering is part of seeing what's really going on. So then once you know what you're dealing with, you can start saying as a species, we're going to change this now that enough people are getting to know what's happening and they're no longer blind to the controls and to the programming. And the great thing is that the children coming in are a lot more aware energetically and telepathically, so they can tell when they're being lied to. They know they are. I always remember this 13-year-old girl telling me about 10 or 14 years ago that when she's in the classroom and a teacher's talking about something, she said, Mary, it's really hard because what they're saying and what they're thinking is two different things. And what she's thinking often isn't very nice. Now, if that teacher had any idea that this little girl was reading her mind, can you imagine how she'd be thinking nicer thoughts, you know? Yeah. So what we have to be aware of now is think pure, mate, think good, because people are now coming to this planet and are on this planet that can see you, really see you, not just see the cover and the nice clothing and how you know, what you're living in or whatever. That is not you.
They can read your spirit. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I've picked up on too with other experiences talking to them, that what you'll notice is that what you're interacting with when you talk about multiple races, they're usually old friends and you've been them or you've been mates with them and they read your spirit signature. Yeah. And that's what these kids are doing now. They can read you straight up and see what your agenda is.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. But it's funny you said the year for chaos, and James Gilliland said the same in his newsletter. And I was getting the same information in his letter going, this is exactly what's going on. And a while ago, I was talking to my family and friends, and they're going, you know, shit's just all chaotic at the moment and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, think about this. Where were you before 2012? And they thought about it. And I said, are you halfway through a backflip? Like you've totally gone the opposite direction? Mm-hmm. They've gone, yep. And then I've asked them about their relationships with their partner. Has things been... Because you've got the male and female powers starting to level out again, because we've got the energetic, you know, solar system plus the galaxy plane. Mm-hmm. And everyone's sort of, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in the field and they're emotional at the moment. They don't know where they're going. Mm-hmm. They're demanding respect. And that's what I've caught people out on. And I said, what's happening is you're aligning with those in line with you. And at the same time, you're clearing your emotional baggage. To go from one state to another state, you've got the changing process. And I said, when you start to get to where you are now, the emotional change is really coming out and you're venting all that. And these kids are here to help that energy once we get to that state, to keep it there, because they're already in that state. Mm-hmm. If they're unfiltered with the programming, which is what my understanding is, because they're already at that love and light energy state where, like you said, they can read what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you were saying just about the thoughts and that. People don't think about what thoughts can do to the physical body.
Yes.
And that's where you look at these, I forget the doctor's name, but I've been putting energy and healing videos up, and it's like how water can be affected by thought.
Yes.
And our body's made up so much of that with the cells, that totally has an effect on where we're going. And if we're bombarded with news of negativity and all this, it's going to have an effect on us. But like you said, it's a year in chaos and it is coming down. I'm talking to Alan Ferguson a few years now, and he said at the start, he goes, Pete, you notice everyone's coming undone. And I said, what do you mean? He said, all these politicians getting caught, people that big corporations, it's coming undone in every way where the average Joe is just noticing stuff isn't how it really seems.
Yeah.
And they're seeing through it, which is a beautiful thing. But, yeah, we've just got to keep pushing on at the moment with what's going on. So have you got any things going on at yourself for the moment that are coming up in this year with any talks or any sort of new projects or other researchers you're working with?
There's a lot of going on. In terms of my program this year, in terms of some of the outreach that I'm doing, is my first one really is in Melbourne in, I think it's the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, a group on Phillip Island who are star seeds, looking at this from the spiritual perspective. And they're flying me over for a few days, and I'm going to do a seminar with a couple of presentations, a workshop on the Sunday, which will bring experiences looking at the various ways they understand their contact, and hopefully giving them a chance to find new ways of getting information and feeling connected. And then I'll probably stay another couple of days just to do the odd regression and what have you. So that's, although I'm doing something here locally as well, a month before, which is just talking a little bit about this and also about hypnosis. And again, we're talking about how we can actually assist ourselves through our thoughts in terms of feeling better and understanding the power of thought. Later on in the year, I will be going to Glastonbury, speaking at Glastonbury Symposium in the UK, and also speaking for Gary Heseltine, UFO Truth in Yorkshire, and doing a little bit of work in the UK as well. So that's overseas. I might be going to the US, possibly at Easter, but I'm not sure. I am also part of a new setup, and it's still not, the website's still not up, but I will just briefly give people an overview. This is, I'm co-director of a foundation called FREE, and it's the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. And we are bringing into that an advisory committee to look at not just how to support people with encounters, but to put out information via documentaries. Also to look at things like free energy and whatever. And some of our advisory committee are in the scientific field and highly credentialed. One of them is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, for example. We've got Dr. Rudy Shield as another one as part of our advisory committee. We've got Dr. Klimo, who's written a lot of work on the transpersonal side of human psi abilities and what have you. So some really highly credentialed scientists and those in their fields. We've got Linda Morton Howe as part of our committee, our advisory committee as well. So basically,
that's a good lineup.
Oh, look, that's just some of them. We've got others as well that are all, some of them are extremely well known within the UFO field. But what we're trying to do is be multidisciplinary. So
well,
that
that's what I was about to say, is like stuff like MUFON, as we were saying, they're sort of just nuts and bolts and whatever, but it sounds like you guys are willing to listen to the contactees and come across information, be open-minded, but then you've got the specialists in each field where they're not going to have a preconceived notion.
Yeah, we've got, you know, the near-death experience, those that are, have, there's one lady that actually deals with the near-death experience, and she's had them and has a foundation for that. So we're looking at consciousness, you know, from everything to do with near-death experience, and it will take in all these other areas of what really is to be human in terms of our, you know, who we really are in terms of our multidimensional nature. And we're bringing in as many specialists from different areas so that we can look at this from a number of levels, including having the science back up. You know, Dr. Edwin Mitchell has his own Consciousness Institute, for example, with scientists. And we're going to be looking at it from the quantum hologram as well.
Well,
so
that's
that we
the
can
way
actually
to go.
Start looking at explaining from a scientific perspective.
That's exactly.
It's got to happen.
Yeah, it does. And that's the way it's got to be done, from that holographic thing and back in. Now, in saying that, when, you know, for example, just with myself and other experiences, and as you would know, it's not just ET. You do have, a lot of the time, the experiences have had near-death experiences. They've seen apparitions and ghosts. They've seen UFOs.
Yes.
They've witnessed high strangeness, orbs in the house, things moving.
Yes.
And it's good because you guys will be able to cover all that aspect with whoever you're delving into, because a lot of the time, people will just want to know about the sighting. And when you bring up the beings, they're like, oh, we'll get somebody else for that. But usually, they're not really that open-minded either, unless it fits what they think.
Yeah.
So that's a really good lineup that you've got, and you will be covering it in so many areas.
We will be looking at also creating credible research via our academic advisory committee, like Dr. Klimo and others that are involved in academia, to actually look at this and look, and we're putting together different ways of gaining information from experiences globally, where we will actually have all the languages. It will be in every language, so that we can tap into the non-English speaking world and their experiences as well. So this is literally going to be a global resource.
And so you'll be talking to experiences, and just say if they said something about propulsion, that information would go to who's delving into that area.
That are looking at the free energy side of it and whatever. So anyone that's getting information around all of that, we will have a subcommittee that will be looking at all the science aspect of it, another one that's looking at all the consciousness aspect of it, and another one that's looking at, you know, everything to do with NDEs or and other sorts of altered states of consciousness and what have you. So there'll be different subcommittees for different areas of research into this, so we can finally, you know, get the credibility, because we'll have the background. And the documentaries will be about not just credible stories that can be qualified by, you know, I've got a lovely here who is, say, a geneticist. You know, a story with a geneticist seeing craft with his father, seeing beings in the room with his partner, describing them, observing them, coming from a scientific background, and then having the science behind how can we actually end up seeing this, so that we've got a way of putting credible information out there with stories that have credibility in terms of how mainstream look at them, where their status is is absolutely totally acknowledged. I've got lawyers, for example, that have had experiences. People take notice of people with the pieces of paper. It's not the way it should be, but it's the way it is. If you've got someone with high credibility saying, this is my experience, and then having the background of science saying, well, in the quantum hologram, this is all more than possible, as Dr. Rudy Shield is one of them that talks about all of this is possible in the quantum hologram of reality. So when you've got the science and you've got someone who's saying, yes, my credentials are, you know, are all out there for everybody to see, this is what we haven't had in documentaries.
Exactly.
Where they usually pick out the Looney Tunes or the ones that look like Looney Tunes. They are edited out. Any kind of sensible stuff is edited out. Well, we will be totally in charge of anything that goes out there. And we will make sure the whole thing is there as a unit. And we are pulling in experts in those fields too. And this isn't about money.
Yeah.
We're totally unfunded. This is about passionate people that have had, if you like, the call to put this together. And one of those who's part of this, got it all downloaded, their role. Absolutely, yeah. Totally downloaded what had to happen. And this is what's happening, of course, is that the star beings are picking people out who they know have the ability to put this into play. And how can they stop that? Because there's too many now. I've
exactly.
Met so many that are highly credentialed, as I say, from lawyers, attorneys, to, you know, people within important positions in corporations that are getting the download saying, you've got to do this. People within the media, you know, people that have techniques and abilities in the film industry, for example, that are getting told, now you've got to focus on this, you've got to do this, and it completely turns their life around. Well, what we're pulling in is that kind of expertise now, where people are saying, well, yes, the reason I'm so passionate for this is because I've had experiences. And you would be amazed at the numbers behind in our advisory committee. The reason they are involved in it is personal.
Yeah, well, that's usually why that's going to happen, because they've got that motivation where they will be neutral because they want to work out what's going on, and they've seen themselves, and they know this is a reality. And it's good that you're getting people with good backgrounds and who are having experiences in there, because people like myself, like I was made to look like a wanker on Sunrise and Prime News and all these other things. Yeah. And my background, I was a cleaner for a while, I was a rap artist, I'm a musician. Oh, you know, not too credible because he hasn't got a certificate in much. But like Alan said the other day when looking at my latest footage, like he said, you know, how can people deny this? You got witnesses, you got the footage, you got it on multiple cameras. And this is happening so much to me. But then I'll look at it the other way and go, well, the type of society that I used to hang out with and that I've still can communicate with is the younger generation, those who do what I do. And I'm affecting that field where other people are affecting the other field. So it's covering the whole gamut.
I think the whole of humanity is being affected. But different skills have different roles to play.
Exactly.
And, you know, and in academia, they will have a number of those being affected so that they can change how academia look at this experience and treat it with respect rather
than, politics,
you know, derision or whatever. You're getting, I mean, we've got one of the people involved in this is an attorney, and he knows how to look at it from the legal angle in terms of what we can put out and what will be seen as credible and what have you, who's brought in some amazing people because of his own experiences. And, you know, some of the people that have seen stuff, you know, doctors, you know, physicians, right through to, you know, biologists and people within the genetic field, chemists, those to do with engineers. We've got an amazing engineer stroke experiencer or whatever, those within the media that have got wonderful contacts. And now we've got people like Linda Morton Howe is the most amazing researcher, huge credibility, journalist and whatever.
Oh, definitely.
So the multidiscipline nature of who we're pulling in as part of this whole new, if you like, set up this foundation is going to create, hopefully, the credentials that we need to be taken seriously globally. And that is the point of it.
Well, it's good because it sounds like everyone's thrown the ego out the window, which, looking back into the past, why this may have not happened quicker is because there would be those who would be offered the chance, but because they rather keep their name to themselves and their research to themselves so they can't be affected. If they screw up, it's their fault. And we all screw up.
Yeah.
Sometimes we might say this is real and we've done research and then find something, you know, that's not on par, but that's a good thing. How many all up, like, could you give a ballpark figure of how many people would be involved with this program?
Well, at the moment, we've got the three co-directors, of one of which is myself, and then there's this advisory committee that is growing exponentially at the moment. And because of that, we're actually creating subcommittees. But as soon as I get the okay to give you a rundown of the advisory committee, I will.
Yep,
we're still in the process of getting the website organized. We've got a genius web designer in Miami who's actually putting the whole the website together at the moment, because we wanted, as I say, to be multilingual. So all the information will be available, whatever the language or whatever. And we will be having a place for experiencers to come in and to give an account of their experiences, and also so that we can actually put that towards research into what are the patterns. What way now can we start putting this out to the therapeutic community as well as the academic community? This is serious research, because we're going to have people behind it that have all the credentials that will give it credibility. That's the plan.
Yep.
Because it has to go that way. We have to play them at their own game. We no longer must be seen as space cadets that, you know, where, you know, oh yeah, they can dismiss it because it's a housewife, because it's a farmer or whatever. They can't dismiss it if these people have a string of credentials behind them, because, you know, it's the only way we can play them at their own game, Peter.
Well, it's fantastic that it's happening, and I think this is going to hit the UFO like a bombshell, like the UFO community and the research community and all fields and disciplines within it, because this hasn't happened yet. But then, like, another thing to add to that is it's not going to be another Chasing UFOs, where there was good stuff obtained on those shows. I've heard James Fox talk about it and others, when it came to cut time, even though they were told I had a bit of a say, it didn't matter. And there was, for example, there was a show I saw where they filmed UFOs, but the where they go and look over it to validate it and, you know, to basically test it, to go, yeah, this is real, never done. Where at the end of a show, you grab all your evidence, scrutinise it, do everything to it. That wasn't done, and people were made to look like nuts.
Yeah.
Even experiences were told that this was going to happen. And, you know, when it came to the crunch, I know that they could have got a piece of metal from Roswell fully tested, fully tested. All that the guy wanted was to be flown to the facility to keep an eye on it. And they said, yeah, it's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Never happened. And it would have cost nothing to a place like, I think it was National Geographic. Now, with what you guys are doing, this won't be aired on TV, but it's going to be TV quality internet.
Oh, look, when we get it together, all of this, we will have the expertise to have this. And it won't be on the commercial channels. It will be on the credible channels, that the thinking person. So they can't dismiss it then as one of these commercial bits of rubbish and what have you. And the most important thing is that we have total control of the editing of whatever it's whatever is put out there. So there's no way that it's going to be, you know, the whole thing about discrediting it. Just like, you know, even with that documentary that I was in, which a lot of people have really liked, most, but there were...
I couldn't watch it all. It pissed me off how you would treat it sometimes.
The interesting thing with that is, even though at the time people couldn't see steam coming out of my ear rolls.
Oh, you were very,
you didn't see me energetically, because I couldn't tell you energetically. I was all ready to put my hands very tightly around somebody's something or other. But the bottom line was that it shows still the arrogance of a lot of the academic community when it comes to things that shake their reality. And I've had a word with the ETs. And I've said, now, look here, just for me, could you at some point land on in the garden of that particular gentleman's garden and just pick him up for a while and just give him the once over, because I'd be most grateful, because I think it would actually perhaps help him understand the reality of it.
Well, definitely. And from what I understood, I think talking to you in the past, that same scenario happened where they said one thing, but then other things were happening when it was the final cut.
There were certain things that I did have a problem with. And what people need to understand is that documentary was done on the back of a 10-week overseas tour. I had one night in my own bed before the film crew turned up. I still didn't know the full agenda. And when I was told about that debate, I had no preparation time whatsoever.
Yeah, but you know your stuff.
Well, I had... They didn't hit. At least when I did the Oxford University one, which was a debate with an astrophysicist and also someone else, I at least had half an hour to present my case. And the astrophysicist was actually head of astrophysics at Manchester University, Professor Zylstra. And the other guy was from the foundation of, I've forgotten, I'll think of it in a minute. But what was interesting was they both, you know, were experts in their field, and we only had half an hour each. But the bottom line was that I actually won that forum. And Professor Zylstra didn't stay for the buffet afterwards, which was interesting. He had to get his train back to Manchester. But it was quite fascinating to see their response to me when they first met me, you know, and you could almost feel the energy of, who the hell is this woman from somewhere called Perth in the middle of nowhere, you know? And, you know, who am I? And I thought, well, you know what? I can do the science thing, and I kept it all very scientific and with testimony. And I got challenged by a professor, and I talked about the Sumerian archaeology and about the Anunnaki from the Sumerian text and Sitchin. And in the question time, this archetypal professor, you know, the big beard and the what have you, he said, I'm professor of Sumerian archaeology. Are you telling me the Anunnaki were extraterrestrial? And I'm going, oh my God, I've got the professor of Sumerian archaeology here, you know, questioning my little bit of knowledge on the Sumerian texts and what I know of Sitchin. And I remember thinking to myself, Mary, this is one time where you can't not look confident, because he'll demolish you otherwise.
Doesn't Anunnaki mean those who from the heavens came?
Yes.
And he's a professor on it.
Yeah, but you see, so all I said was absolutely, that if we went back in time with our technology, even 200 years, we would be seen as gods. And I said, so, you know, to me, that says it all. He never disagreed. He never came back. He actually took it. So I thought, you must know, mister, because you were just checking me out, you know. But though I didn't win by a huge margin, I did win.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things was that a young student came up to me, and it was quite funny. He said, I've got a friend, he said. I love this. I've got a friend who took the magic mushrooms and saw a grey ET. Was that genetic, or was he really seeing something? And I said, I suspect that because of the magic mushrooms, he'd altered his reality and was able to see the grey. And he said, oh, thank you very much, with a big grin on his face.
I had him years ago and saw some trippy stuff. Very so trippy.
But it gave me, at least it exposed me to the whole academic scenario. But what my problem was with Canberra and this gentleman was he gave the impression, like Professor Zylstra treated the subject with respect and, you know, talked about it respectfully in terms of his position as an astrophysicist. Charlie Lineweaver didn't. I mean, he just used it as a vehicle for mockery and derision. And that was where I got angry. If he'd even, you know, treated it with, you know, semi-respect as a possibility in terms of what I knew. But it was a total whitewash.
Well, how he conducted himself was, to me, childish. Because it's even with people I've brought here that are skeptics.
Yeah.
There was one night I had someone here, and they got here about 5 minutes after I filmed the UFO with the witnesses here. And I said, dude, watch this.
Yeah.
And, you know, just powering up and doing whatever. And I said, tell me what it is.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what it was, like from what I thought it was, but I said, mm-hmm. and he, you know, not a helicopter, not a plane, not a satellite, you know, yeah. couldn't be a spacecraft because what is, you know, our type yeah. of stuff or black ops. But then when we got into stuff like with structures of the moon, because we talked before, and then I led him to some places, but then he looked at both sides of the argument, but he didn't delve into it because mm-hmm. what, even with scientists, you can have they'll go and find a scientific view that makes them right, that yeah. backs up what their theory is. But what a real scientist should do is get yeah. something for and against and yeah. stuff that's not either way
yeah.
and really redo it themselves. And you might have two pieces from the, you know, saying it's not, that yeah. are real coming to it, and then a couple of bits yeah. from the real. You've got to mix that up. And a lot of them don't want to do it, the scientific community, which... I know that they're saying, oh, my name is going to be tarnished and this and that, but it's got to get to the point where people have got to use morals and go, "Is it? Am I going to back this up because there's something to this and it's something huge to humanity, or I'm just going to be somebody that's going to sit down and not say anything?" More and more people are speaking up, but the way that bloke conducted himself on that movie, I think it's called My Mum Talks to Aliens, is it?
Yeah.
I just had to turn it off there because it was too childish for me to look at.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Well, funnily enough, the director, the producer of the whole program said to me, actually, he was very disappointed that it was treated like this. And he said, you know, he's going to regret that kind of attitude. The numbers, the hundreds of emails that I got afterwards where they were saying they loved the program, but they were really angry about the way that I was treated in that. And also, I think he probably got a lot of emails that he'd rather not have got, because I also had academics write to me and say how disgusting it was. But what it did highlight is how the mainstream, if they don't want to go there, what they will do to actually hide behind their credentials and mock something they're not. And I've always said that there'll be 10% of the planet that if a UFO landed on their front lawn, they'd say it was a fire engine, because they can't go there. And I suspect he couldn't go there. But it's really important for people to realize that, you know, they can have all the credentials in the world. It doesn't make them open-minded.
Well, I laugh at it because it's so serious, I think. Mm. I think if they go, oh, what if this is real, and they contemplate it, and yeah. when they do contemplate it, they look at the ramifications. Like people I heard the other day saying something wasn't exposed because it would rewrite history. And I'm thinking, all of history needs to be rewrite with what I know. Because,
that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, my biggest problem after coming out was I was still going through the awakening. And I think you continue it. I think you don't stop. But what I noticed, and I was down for a while, and people were, family was really noticing it, was I was saying to them, my problem is that everything I've been taught and everything I know through mainstream society is a lie.
Yeah.
And I said, that's a lot for me to come to grips with, because I've got to reprogram myself, and I do it through meditation and listening to videos like this that other people do and reading books and research. But that's a really big bloody thing to do, is when you get realise after all these years, and I'm, you know, a lot of people awaken later than me. I'm lucky that I was about 26, 27 at the time. But, you know, if you're a bit older, you know, there's so much deprogramming that you've got to do, and you've got to do it neutrally. You still got to take some things that are in history that may be real, because there is some that is, but not a lot of it. So you've sort of got to, you know, re-look at everything again. In saying that, we'll cover this just for the last bit. You get a lot of experiences coming to you. You're the principal of ACERN. You've got others that work with you in ACERN. What's usually the first thing that you go through the process with people to get them help or to get them to go somewhere else? Because more than ever, I'm getting the stuff too, and that's why I've put up a page on the website where people can go to you and others in different states. Because it's coming at full force for me, and I think for you and others as well, and I'm sort of trying to split it up everywhere. There are a few that I take on. It's just, you know, you've just got to help who you think you can help and then lead them where they've got to go. Now, in saying that, one thing that was hard for me was I was stupid in the beginning. I read your book and it was good because you're saying sort of test the waters with either your doctor or counsellors about opening up, sort of, if you don't feel confident that they'll be open-minded. I was stupid. I was like, yeah, I've been filming this, I've got this, this is what's going on, I'm seeing, you know, things that go bump in the dark, and I can't, you know, I'll say that they're extraterrestrial or whatever. It was pretty stupid, although when my doctor retired, he read all my books and he felt a bit sorry about that, which is, you know, he'd been a doctor for nearly 50 years, and because they tried putting me on saying that I was bipolar and borderline schizophrenia. And he realised in the end, you know, if other people are seeing this and he's got the footage and all this and that, and I don't want, not saying that it wasn't wrong or right, but it has put me in a position where that's always going to be my medical record and people are going to question that. I haven't even touched, I was on the meds for like a few months, so I've been off the medicine for years and I'm actually more plastered and better than ever. But that's a mistake that some people do, is they say the wrong stuff to the wrong people and it affects them for their life with records. And this is where I wanted to talk with you about how people can get help to, you know, and talk to people, you know, whether they're doctors or counsellors. But if they don't think it's going to work out, do not do it. You know, you've got to test the waters, talk to somebody like yourself who's got the credentials and isn't going to think they're loony. How do you go about that when they first come to you?
Well, it's a good question. I get many people that, you know, ring me up and say, I hope you're not going to think I'm crazy. And then I say, well, how about you start telling me about what's going on and then we can work out what is going on. The very first thing that I do with most people is send them a questionnaire, and that's not for them to prove anything to me. That's more for them. That's to help them realize there may be things in their life that have happened that they haven't attributed as part of this picture of their encounters or whatever. So it's more to help them, you know, put things together and realize, you know, whether or not, and because they may say, look, I don't know whether this is relevant to me, but this happens and that happens and whatever. So they need, if you like, a map. And so my questionnaire is a bit of a map. Then they'll come back to me and I will see certain patterns that I, you know, it's pretty obvious to me that that's relevant to them. And I just say to them, look, you make up your own mind. You've answered all these. You've had so many positives, this, that, and the other. How does that make you feel? And they, most times they'll say, well, it makes me feel good because at last I can make some sense of it and what have you. I said, so that's where you start. Now you've got to decide what it is you most need to move forward with your understanding. And for some people, they may have had missing time episodes where they've never known quite what happened and they have a great desire to uncover that. Or they may just feel like they need to meet others so they can talk about some of these things and not be made to feel stupid. And so part of it may just be they need a buddy. They need someone else who's in a good place that's prepared to, so that if something happens the night before, they can ring them up and say, look, this weird thing happened. Have you ever had anything like this or whatever? I mean, I do encourage now little groups to create a little network for themselves. And I'm saying, if you're having experiences in where they don't care how small the town is, there'll be others, but they may not know where to go either. And you may find somebody on your doorstep that's actually having experiences. If you can start being a little bit more comfortable with who you are and putting out, you know, you can keep it, you know, even if it's a little advert in the paper, you know, are you interested in the UFOs or the paranormal? You don't have to say you're an experiencer. You can just say, these are my interests. Is there anyone else locally interested in that? That might pull in somebody else who's had an experience and just saying, well, I'm interested in UFOs. You start to realize that it's everywhere. But it's the isolation and the feeling of not feeling safe is probably one of the biggest issues for people.
Which so is really the first stage when looking into it personally. Yeah. Like, I noticed for me it was more isolation and fear. Mm. And then I got pissed off because I knew it was real and I was wondering why. And then once I got so angry, I had contact in a way that I knew more than ever. It was sort of like a confirmation, even though I had so much stuff. And then after that, it went to accepting and embracing my connection. Because I know why I'm here. I've seen the contract. I can remember all that sort of thing. But that was a lot to go through. But that's the hard phases, isn't it? The start where it's the isolation and fear and accepting.
And not knowing who you can safely talk to. And that's where, I talk about being a bit cluey about who you're going to share this with. I mean, you may know someone, you know, in psychology, for example, they may be a friend that you know within a little they might be safe, or you might say, I need to go and see a psychologist to make sure this isn't some kind of other thing going on or some other issue. But you don't have to lay your cards on the table right away. What you can do is see how open-minded they are. I mean, ask them, you know, ring them up anonymously if you have to and say, look, I'm thinking of coming to see someone, but I'd like to know what your ideas are on is the life in other planets? And if they say, well, I think it's a load of rubbish, you've got your answer. If they say, well, I think it's quite possible, can you tell me whether or not you think people can have these experiences with these intelligences or not? Yes, I think it's quite possible, and I might have had a few people that have had those kinds of experiences. Well, what's that telling you? Is someone there is possibly going to be okay to talk to? But you can keep it, you can say it's my friend if you want to. You don't have to give them your name. So you're not laying yourself on the line until you know it's a safe vehicle for you. Because there are a lot of open-minded psychologists. They won't sit and tell you that they're open to this, but they may have heard enough stories to know, or to be honest, may very well be an experiencer. You'll be amazed at how many Clin Sykes get in touch with me that have had experiences and want to help experiences on the QT, but can't say to their colleagues, you know, actually, I had all these strange... I mean, I'm connecting with them all over the planet that are writing to me saying, I'd like to support experiences. And I talked to somebody just a couple of days ago in LA who says, look, you know, I want to support those more. And we had this wonderful talk. So I says, all right, no more BS. Why are you so focused on wanting to help experiences? Now, you tell me the truth. Tell me about you. And, of course, it all comes out right when I was a kid, la, la, la. So I went into psychology because I knew that maybe that would help me understand more and what have you. And now I realize I need. So, you know, there's a lot of them out there, like, you know, they're having the experiences, but they can't own it towards their, in their peers. And I've met psychiatrists that have had experiences and what have you. Again, they can't talk to their peer group around it, but they know it's real. They know and I mean, one of them I knew very well was involved in UFO groups over in Perth, you know. So the truth is, it's everywhere. Yeah. It's just how you approach it. You know, when people come to my door, my daughter laughs and says, everybody who comes to the door seems to have had UFO experiences. What is there about you, Mum? And I said, what is there about me is that I actually don't hide the fact that I'm open to this experience. So, you know, I'll say to them, have you ever seen anything unusual in the skies? And that's all you need to say. Yeah. And they'll say, oh, I did see a strange light once. I always wondered about it. Off you go. And it'll be the plumber, or it'll be the painter, or it'll be somebody coming to mend your what's-her-names. But unless you're open to listening to it, you're not going to be... I mean, you don't have to lay it all down. You don't have to say, well, I'm having experience. I've heard of people, you can say, that have had these experiences. What do you reckon to that? Do you think it's, you know... You know, then you're throwing the fishing line out. You're using the right bait.
yeah,
to pull in the ones that you know are someone else who's had it and they've never talked about it. I've never known who to go to. I mean, that the isolation with that, and I know we're probably running out of time. I just wanted to say this was a beautiful gentleman in his 50s, and he rang me up and he said, I've had things go on, he said, but I've never, ever talked about it with anyone because I never felt safe. I sent him the questionnaire. He rang me back after getting it in tears. He was so emotional. And he said to me, and I've not forgotten how emotional he was. He said, how do you know about my life? And I said, well, I don't, other than I know the patterns of this experience. And he said, it's like you've been sitting on my shoulder through my life. And this is the power of the patterns. This is actually what it's about, is once they get that, that it's not just, and I said, and you would be amazed at the hundreds of thousands of millions of people out there that are having this experience, but don't know what it is or just think it's them.
No, that's spot on. That's spot on. And it's a lot to take in at the start, and that's why we would have been in that state, because you're just like, what the hell? How could, you know, so many ticks, and then it's absorbing that, and then it's like, how? How's this known? You know, why? And then it all opens up from there. And it's a lot to take in. It took me a while myself just to, you know, just to ponder on it, think about it, absorb it, and then you sort of get obsessed with it, and then you've sort of got to back off a bit.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to work out what's going on at the start. And I think, like I said to everyone, I wouldn't even know 0.0001% out of 1,000% of what's going on. But for me, you'll learn what you need to know.
Yeah.
And you'll experience what you need to know. And that's what it's about. Everyone's got their little journey and their little piece of the jigsaw puzzle, but we've got to work together. And I think over time too, what I've noticed is that I've communicated with so many experiences, but over a while, it's sort of like counselling each other, because there'll be some that you resonate with.
Yeah.
And that's where it sort of goes on after a while, is they might come to you or whatever, and then after a while it will... And that's happened with me. I was coming to you at the start, and we communicate all the time, but, you know, then there's others, and you're sort of just helping each other, voicing what's going on and talking about what's going on. And because even to now, I get some crazy emails. But knowing what I've witnessed and continue, I don't blow it off, but it doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
So I sort of lead them to someone else, and I don't do it in a disrespectful way. Like yourself, I'm bloody busy, but, you know, you do make time to reply to emails and what you can. But, yeah, there is some really crazy far-out stuff, but I don't blow it off, because if they haven't experienced what I've experienced and they've read my book and then they go, you know, this guy's just out there, well then, you know, no wonder they haven't experienced what I have. So it's just finding who resonates, and that's why I wanted to cover that at the end of the show, because I think it's important for those awakening and, you know, realising what's going on or suspecting that something's going on with them, which your book sort of covers all that, those that suspect it or who are living with somebody going through it or somebody going through it. It looks at it from all those point of views, and I sort of see it as the book to go to for this type of thing, which is why I wanted to have you back on and cover other things as well, because I do think it's really important, because it's the awakening stage. Your book's called Awakening. That's the stage where you've got to do it right. There's no right or wrong thing, but for me, like I said, I stuffed up because I blurted everywhere. I was on, but before I knew it, I was on Prime TV news around the country, and I didn't even ask for that. You know, it's just, they wanted to look at it. So you've got to do it right where you're looking after yourself at the same time, but of benefit to yourself and the cause of what's going on. So, but we'll wrap it up there, Mary.
Okay.
It's always a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for being on.
It's a pleasure, Peter. Always, it's a very lovely chat that we have, and I hope that anyone listening, and I'm sure they will really enjoy both, not only what I'm saying, but what you're saying too, because you've got so much to offer. So thank you, Peter. That's great.
Very appreciated, Mary. And thank you for taking the time out. I know you're busy like anything. So, yeah, it's muchly appreciated.
You're most welcome, Peter. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.